Okay, good morning. So Rai Black had sent me the email and I got multiple emails to speak about what we can talk about when discussing students, parents, donors, what things we have to think about from a halachic perspective. So I want to just sort of outline the halachic issues, the halachic ethical issues that are involved in terms of when we decide what's proper and what's not, and when we're supposed to speak about students, when we're not, and the like. So really there are two central halachic issues that need to be addressed if we want to talk about what information we can share about whoever it is we need to share. There are two halachic issues that needed to be dealt with. The first one is not the issue of Lashon Hara, or at least was colloquially called Lashon Hara. The first issue is the halachic issue of confidentiality. The Gemara, let's start with the Pasuk. Right? The Pasuk in number one tells us that Lo Telech Rachil Ba'amecha, you shall not be that's a bad translation, but you can't be a talebearer amongst your people. Otamin al dam reyecha ani Hashem. You can't profit by the blood of your fellow. I'm the Lord. Now, in general, people refer to that pasuk, this verse, is talking about the prohibition against gossip. But the truth is that that's not at all clear. If you look in many of the commentaries, the Ritva, for example, Rabbi Yom Tov Azvili, in his commentary to Bava Basra, Daf Lamedes, he writes that this verse doesn't actually just prohibit gossip, it prohibits breaching confidentiality. And this is also said explicitly in Mishle, in Proverbs number 2, that Rivcha Riv et Reyecha v'sod acher al tegal, defend your rights against your fellow, but do not give away the secrets of another. And the Gemara outlines this in number 3 and says, quoting a pasuk, "Vayikra el Moshe vayidaber." Lama hikdim kriya ledivur limda Torah derechesh yomar adam davar lechaveru lamkein kareyu. So first, the Gemara outlines that when God called to Moshe, so first he sort of called out to him, he initiated the conversation. Then did he actually engage in the conversation? So why did he do that? To teach people that before you actually engage them in conversation, you've sort of got to initiate, you've got to call them and invite them into the conversation. And this supports the position of Rabbi Chanina. Now, once the Gemara is talking about the speech ethics, it then adds a second level and says, Lemor. What do we learn from the end of the verse? Lemor. So the word Lemor, which really just means saying, can also be read as a contraction of two words. Lo emor, right? Do not say. And from here, the Gemara derives Amar Rav Minasya Barbaradir Rav Masya Mishmeidir Aimusya Rabba Minayin Lomar Dabar Lichaver Shahu Bival Yomar Acha Yomar Lecho Lech Emor. How do you know that anything you relate to somebody is presumed to be confidential unless they told you go and say it? Meaning this is not confidential. Because when God would speak to Moshe and tell him, I want you to speak this message to the Jewish people, he would finish it with the word lemor. Lemor means saying. If God articulated to Moshe, what I'm telling you now is meant for others to hear, so then he could convey it. But if he didn't, so then you could not. And Mogen Avram, Ramram Gombina, writing in Aruch Chaim, so in Kufnun Vav, codifies this lahalacha, notes that the Gemara thinks that there is a prohibition to breach confidentiality. And what is assumed to be confidential? So the Gemara makes it clear. It's not just something that someone tells you, this is a secret, but everything is assumed to be confidential until you know otherwise. Now, of course, we can get into all types of middle cases, right? There's a lot of information that even if we don't tell somebody, this is confidential, or this is not confidential, we know from context whether they think it's confidential, right? Meaning, sure, if I ask someone, you know, what's the weather like outside, and they tell me what the weather is like, and then they don't tell me this is not confidential, I can still assume that they're not telling me confidential information. But any information which you have any doubt about, the Gemara's basic rule is that if you aren't told that it is not confidential, you have to assume that something that someone tells you in a private conversation is not meant for public consumption. So, now this, before we even get into Lashon Hara, right, we tend to, when we think about speech ethics and halacha, what can we speak about with students, teachers, colleagues, donors, whoever the case may be, we jump right to negative information. And we think that it's totally fine that, you know, we had a conversation with a student and the student told me something not in confidence, right? Didn't pull me to the side and say, this is a secret. But just, we were having a conversation. We assume that we can automatically relay that information to everybody else. And the first thing you have to realize, that's not necessarily true. Right? There is this assumption that people say things to the people they want them to be heard by. Now again, that doesn't mean that anything that anybody tells you ever is confidential, right? Sometimes from context, it's clear that it's not meant to be private, right? You know, if you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody and people are walking in and out of the conversation and they're clearly not looking over their shoulder, who comes into the conversation? So it's clear this is public information. Whoever happens to be there, they're discussing. But often you talk to a student, they tell you about, I don't know, they tell them about their family life, the difficulties they're having, right? They want to keep more mitzvot. There's tension with their parents. You may not think that they're private about it because you know that they told you. Maybe they told two of you. And you might think you can automatically share that information, but the truth is maybe not. Maybe they're comfortable telling that to people in their 20s. They don't want that to be told to people who they see as their parents' age. Right? They're just not comfortable. And even though they didn't tell you it's a secret, you have to assume that information that was said privately is confidential. And that's, I think, a first sort of axis of halachic issues or of ethical issues that you got to think about when you're conveying information. The same thing goes in terms of colleagues, and the same thing goes in terms of donors. Right? These were all the questions that it was sent. But you think about it, right? Often, I know organizations don't like sharing information about donors because you don't want to, right? That you want to get information from donors, but other people you don't want to share it. But even if you're willing to share information, it's not clear that you can, right? People don't necessarily want to know, right? If people are funding NCSY, they don't, you know. So people now know that they like supporting Kirov, they like supporting education, you know. But they may not want to support another organization. They may not want other organizations knocking on their door, right? You can't just assume because you had a conversation with them that you're allowed to share that information. You're not. Right, and I didn't put this source on the page, but the truth is there's even another Gemara that's relevant. In that context, right, the Gemara, it appears in different versions, different places. The Gemara in Baba Metzia, that Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, says that one of the things that a Talmud Chacham, a scholar, is allowed to lie about is achsanya, is being a guest. Now, what does that mean? So the Rishonim divide, but one of the interpretations of the Rishonim is that if you ate at somebody's house and it was amazing, it was just like, you know, you stay there for Shabbos, and they are the best hosts in the world. And someone asks you, how was it, right? I'm going to the same city. You know, we have a Shabbaton, you know, an NCSY Shabbaton. We have it in New York. How was it when you stayed at such and such's house, right? And you had the best experience in your life. So the Gemara actually says you're allowed to lie and downplay it. Now, why should you downplay it? Why don't you tell them they're the best hosts in the world, right? If they, you know, they gave you the best, you know, they have the most comfortable mattresses and pillows and the best food, why wouldn't you want to say, you know, it's great, you want to stay there? And the answer the Rishonim says is because they may not want the whole world knocking on their door, right? They may have hosted Roy Black at the Shabbaton because he's an amazing guest to have. But they may not want every madrich who is traveling through the area for Shabbaton to be at their house, right? They're busy people. Certain guests they're willing to entertain. But if you play it up, as good as it was, you might think, hey, I'm showing how good these people were, showing how hospitable they were. What could be bad? The Gemara, the Rishonim say, no, not everybody wants the extent of their hospitality publicized, because, you know what, they might tell them it was good, and then, you know, people will ask them or they won't ask them. But if you overemphasize how great it was to stay there, And then you're going to create unfair pressure because everyone's going to want to stay there, you know, the next time you have a Shabbaton in the city, and people are going to knocking on their door and calling them up. And you know what? They're willing to have people every 3 months. They're not willing to have people every 2 weeks, right? It's just a lot of effort. So you have to, so one thing you have to think about before we get to negative information, which is what we tend to think about and what we're supposed to hold back, you have to remember that halacha believes A, that there is a presumption of confidentiality, and B, even when something's not confidential, like in the case of hosting, right? Everyone knows you went to their house, everyone knows you enjoyed, you don't need to sing people's praises if there's a possibility that by over-singing their praises, there's going to be an implication that they have to extend the same favors to other people when maybe they're not willing to or they're not able to and it's too much of a burden. So the first level we have to realize in sort of halachic speech ethics is that halacha doesn't just limit things which are negative or possibly negative. It also recognizes that there's confidentiality and there's even a limitation on positive speech. Because, you know, people are allowed a certain level of privacy and a certain level of, discretion in terms of what we say about them. Because we can't just assume that they want the pressure that comes with everybody knowing how good they are, right? And again, I think that would apply back to the donor's case, right? Just because someone's a donor for you, so within the organization, fine, right? Clearly, if someone made a donation to you, right, they expect that people within the organization will know unless they say, you know, make it anonymous and don't let anybody know. But they may not want you to share that information with other people who might then come knocking on their door. And that's something to think about. Okay. Then, obviously, there's the issue of negative speech, right? What is colloquially called Lashon Hara, the prohibitions against gossip. Now, I don't want to get into an entire academic discussion of this, of whether Lashon Hara actually means gossip. I'm just going to assume that Lashon Hara means gossip, but you should know that if you ever want to sit down and actually really go through the laws of Lashon Hara in the primary sources, not the Chafetz Chaim writing in the 20th century, right? People think like Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen is like this ancient person who lived a million years ago. He wrote the Mishnah Berurah. It's like a classic work on Shulchan Aruch. It's not. I mean, it's a great work on Shulchan Aruch, but he's not classic in the sense of like historical. He died in 1933, right? His obituaries in the New York Times. We're not talking something that has like, you know, is ancient. This work didn't exist. There were, you know, if you want to sort of go to the primary sources, the earlier sources about Lashon Hara, you'll realize that the word Lashon Hara, or the Aramaic equivalent that's used by the Gemara, Lishna Bisha, didn't mean gossip for many of the commentaries. The Ritva, as I mentioned before, thought that Lashon Hara isn't primarily gossip. It's gossip is one category, and breaching confidentiality is the other, and thinks that the Gemara in Bava Basra actually tells you that the primary violation of Lashon Hara is breaching confidentiality, not saying negative information. But let's just stick with sort of the colloquial definition, which is that there's three levels of prohibited speech. And this is the definition the Chafetz Chaim adopts based on the Rambam, which I gave you in four. I'll just say it outside, but that there's three levels of prohibited speech. Right, the worst of the worst is motzi shemra, which is slander. It's false, right? False gossip. Right, if I'm speaking negatively about somebody else and it's negative, that's obviously the worst of the worst. Then there's lashon hara, which is true negative gossip, and then there's rechilus, which is where I don't even necessarily say information, but I say that someone else spoke about you, right? I create sort of animosity by low-level insinuations and communications, and so that's basically the Rambam. The Rambam's three levels. Right? You look here in the middle of number four. Right? He says, "Ezu Rachil." Who is this Rachil? That first level. Zeshet Toein Dvarim Valech Mizel Lezev Omer Kach Amar Laploni Kach VeKach Shamati Alploni. And someone says, right, I've heard that he was, I heard that he was talking about this, I've heard such and such, right, I'm not even, right, Rechilus is, you know, sort of a level down from Lashon Hara, but in general we're talking about, right, gossip, true, false, and in general we can't say negative information about people, that's Lashon Hara. Okay, fine. But, as we know, there are often times when, you know, a student says something to you, or you know something about a student, which is negative, but you have a reason to share it with your colleagues. Right? This person is disruptive in classes. So that may be, right? That's negative, but if you want to figure out, should you enroll them in, I don't know if you blacklist people, right? But if you... You do, okay, right, okay, so, okay, fine, right? It's important, right, if someone disrupts classes, or someone, whatever, for whatever reason you don't want them in the class, it's important that you can tell, you know, your colleagues, this person shouldn't be allowed in classes, or if this person is in classes, this is, you have to control them, right? They have to sit here, or whatever the case may be. Or, you know, I remember when I was doing recruiting, I used to, for 2 years I worked for Yeshivat Har Tzion on the sort of American end, doing recruiting for them, right? And often, recruiters would share the following information. You know, don't accept that kid, not because the kid is bad, I don't know the kid, but that parent is the biggest pain in the neck. You do not want that kid in your institution. They're going to be the person who's going to call you every day and complain about everything. They're going to fly in, they're going to sit in all your classes, they're going to criticize everything you do. Just, if you can avoid, sorry to the kid, but, you know, avoid the parent, right? This happens, right, all the time. There's all types of information that is negative, clearly negative, but is beneficial and even necessary to be conveyed. So the question then becomes, okay, well, under what circumstances can I share that information? So here it gets a bit complicated, and I want to present this the opposite of the way that most people will present it, okay? Because I think there's a problem with the way it's normally presented. I'm not poskening, but let me just give you a framework here of how to think about this, okay? Most shirim that you'll ever hear on Lashon Hara will go basically as follows. There is a terrible Torah prohibition called Lashon Hara. You can't speak badly, you can't speak negatively about people. End of story. If you don't know what you're doing, you're going to be talking badly about people all the time. This is really, really bad. But sometimes it's necessary to say information about people, and, you know, Halacha has carved out exceptions, and the Chafetz Chaim gives you 7 conditions that you have to meet. And if you meet those 7 conditions, then it can count as what he calls Lashon Hara L'Toelet, right? Beneficial Lashon Hara. If you can check off all 7 boxes, so then it is permitted to speak Lashon Hara, because it's Lashon Hara L'Toeles. And that is, to be fair, how most Shiurim will present the topic. And we'll come to that in a second, but... So here's a historical claim, okay? This is, Rav Lichtenstein used to note this, but, and many have noted this. And this is something I mentioned just before. The Chafetz Chaim was written, again, 20th century. Right? There was no code of Hilchot Lashon Hara until the 20th century. And one of the big questions people ask is, why not? Right? And 2 is, does the Chafetz Chaim represent normative halacha on Lashon Hara? And those 2 questions are related, right? Because it could be that the why not is simply because nobody wrote it before. No one just sat down to do it, and he sat down to do it. But once he sat down to do it, well, this is what we have, and therefore you can assume that everything there is the standard halacha, because, you know, there's nothing previous to really compare it to. The other possibility is that the Chafetz Chaim was the first person who thought that Hilchot Lashon Hara should be subject to rigorous halachic definition in the classic sense, codification. And people before the Chafetz Chaim tended to think of Lashon Hara more as a ethical halacha, right? Which is a bit more, by definition, flexible. Right, and therefore didn't lend itself to codification. Now, there's a professor, if you're interested in the topic, it's a theoretical discipline, Benny Brown at Hebrew University, who's written a tremendous amount on the Chafetz Chaim, And he's argued that this is really, the latter is really the case. The Chafetz Chaim wasn't just the first to codify it, but he was the first who thought it should be codified. And that really Lashon Hara belongs to the world of what he calls the morals of aspiration rather than the morals of duty. Meaning the world of ethics rather than the world of law, which has implications in terms of how we carve out exceptions in it. But even if you don't, you know, want to take sort of some academic paper, the truth is that there's a lot of evidence this is true. The Netziv and his the Netziv wrote an approbation for one of the Chafetz Chaim Svarim, Sefer Avad Chesed, which on the one hand is an approbation, on the other hand is a bit of a backhanded. I don't know what you want to call it, right? He says this is a great book if you think that this is how you're supposed to treat chesed as a formal halachic discipline. And then he goes and presents an essay which basically argues that chesed is not subject to rigorous legal analysis in the same way as everything else, because chesed is not something that's limited to Jews. This is not just something which is halachic. It's from the world of ethics. And sure, halacha has something to say about it, but it also has a level of universal morality, and therefore it's a bit different and has to be assessed differently. Now, why is this sort of background important? Yeah.
Could you argue that Chafetz Chaim was necessitated at that time based on Yerida Sidoros?
So this is not a criticism. So again, you can argue that the Chafetz Chaim just was necessary because he was the first. You know, no one had talked about it, but maybe everyone was better about talking, or it was a generation who needed more detailed instructions. I can argue a lot of things, and I want to argue now on whether we should or should not paskin like the Chafetz Chaim. And it's clear that if you want to learn Lashon Hara, the best place to start is the book called Sefer Chafetz Chaim, because he's the one who wrote it. But, and this is a point that has been made by many, though very few people have actually systematically analyzed it, is how accepted is the Chafetz Chaim actually? And I that sounds a bit controversial, but let me put it this way. Okay? Everyone is going to agree that there are certain circumstances where it's permitted to convey negative information about somebody else. Right? Everyone agrees with that fact. But there's two very different ways of conceptualizing it. One is the way the Chafetz Chaim did, which is, negative information is presumed to be forbidden. If you want it to be permitted, you need to carve out an exception. And you've got to check off those seven check boxes. And if all of them fit, so then it's still Lashon Hara, but it's Lashon Hara litoelet. It's gossip, but permitted. And therefore, like, I have to push myself, and I have to be scared to say it, but push come to shove, I can convey that information. That's one way of thinking about it. But the other way of thinking about it is saying, no, Lashon Hara isn't a formal prohibition to say negative information. It is a ethical, legal obligation to avoid needlessly derogating somebody. And therefore, if it's not needless and it's not being done for vindictive reasons, it's not Lashon Hara at all. It's not Lashon Hara which I need to carve an exception for. That's not what Lashon Hara is. Now that sounds like sort of a linguistic, like sort of a semantic difference, but it isn't. Because if you think about it, right, what happens if, you know, you have a piece of information, you have a strong conviction that it's necessary to convey it, you go to the Chafetz Chaim's list, and you can check off six of them, but the seventh one, you can't quite get it. And you have a deep conviction that this is really important that I convey it. If you think that Lashon Hara is forbidden until you check off all seven boxes, then you're just going to say, okay, what we call in halacha, shev al tase adif. Don't share the information. But if you think that, no, Lashon Hara is part of a broader speech ethic in halacha, which tells you don't needlessly share negative information, but you have a conviction, you look at this and say, this is not needless, this is necessary, so then you don't have to start checking off boxes. You're going to say, I know that this is permitted. I know that it's necessary. Right now, I'm not... Yeah. Okay. I haven't even showed a source yet, but... Okay.
My immediate question is just, I'm trying to understand what you're saying so that I can process it. So first of all, you're saying that there's two ways to learn the Chafetz Chaim. One is, it's halachah d'oraisa, and that's what the sefer is.
Correct.
The second way is, the Chafetz Chaim put together the sefer Chafetz Chaim for a door and for the doors that are going to happen after, so that they can have a nice context for the laws of Lashon Hara and
No. I'm not saying what the Chaim, his intent was,
I'm saying if something's a Yidderaisa, it doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter that I didn't check up 7 boxes and I feel I should say it.
Correct. And that's why now... Correct. So now let me prove my point before I just being in the air, right? I'm not gonna like wipe away the Chafetz Chaim without suggesting why I think this is true. But look, for example, in 5, okay? Look! Wait. Let me present the source and then we'll come back to it, okay? So, for example, the Gemara in number 5 says as follows: Tan Rabbanan, minayin l'rodei v'chaver l'hargo shenitan l'atzil b'nafsho. Talmud lomar lo samod al dam reyecha. Okay, the Gemara says, how do I know that if I see somebody chasing somebody to kill them, that I can't stand idly by? Because the pasuk says, don't stand idly by. V'alacha yudasa mi baylech zatani minayin l'rodei v'chaver shu tovei b'nar ochay garartel olistin ban lav shu chayv l'atzilo. Talmud lomar lo samod al reyecha en achanami. Right, the Gemara says, how do you know that it's specifically for that case? That it's only when someone's chasing him to kill him. Maybe if it's he's drowning and, you know, being attacked, you have to step up and you have to protect him. The Gemara says, you're right. We have a prohibition to not protect someone who needs protection. Based on the Pitkei Tshuva in Aruch Chaim Kufnun Vav, it's not the same Pitkei Tshuva in the rest of Shulchan Aruch. It's a different Pitkei Tshuva. Right, writes as follows: V'ra'iti l'nachon lahir li'idach gisa. Right, after discussing sort of the Balei Musar who talk about the importance, right? He's before the Chafetz Chaim, but he's talking about Balei Musar who have started to talk about the prohibition of Chafetz, of Lashon Hara. He said, I've got to push in the other direction. He said, Sheyesh Avon Gadol Yoter Mizeh. There's a much greater sin than Lashon Hara. You know what that is? V'gamu Matsui Biyoter, and it's very common. V'zeu Mishonon Moneya Atzmo Miligalot. And that's when you prevent yourself from saying something which is necessary to prevent someone who's being oppressed from his oppressor. And why are you doing it? Because you're worried about Lashon Hara. Be like someone who sees someone going and, you know, you see that he wants to kill somebody. Or he sees him, you know, tunneling in the middle of night, and you don't tell your friend that someone's trying to kill him. Because you think it's Lashon Hara. If you do that, your sin is too great to bear. That's true not just for capital things, right? For death, it's true for money. Right, you see someone who might be cheating somebody else, and you don't say something. That's a violation of lo tamar al dam reyacha. Rabbi Soloveitchik, you say dam can mean two things. Dam is blood, but dam is also damim. Right? It's right when Chazal say that you can't stand there when someone's going to lose money, it's because it's lo tamar al damim shal reyacha. Right? You can't stand by. Kolayu bechal mitzvah hashavet aveda, and this is under the mitzvah hashavet aveda. Shavet gufo vavet aveda mamamano. You have a responsibility if someone's going to lose money to return it to him. If someone's going to lose his body, his health, you got to return it to him. And it's all given over to your heart. If your intent is negative, then it's Lashon Hara. But if the reason you're saying is to help somebody, to save them, this is not a Lashon Hara with an exception, it's a mitzvah. Or skip to 8 for a moment. The Rav Asher Weiss summarizes in 2 lines. B'yisurei Torah tzarich ladun b'din d'chiya. Hayim toelet zu riyuya l'tchot yisur. In general, we have to think about prohibitions d'oraisa and d'chiyo, meaning exceptions. Right? Where do I push the yisur aside? Abo b'ilchot lashon hara la midin d'chiya lid atin en Allah. But when we talk about positive cases where you have to share information, this is not because we're pushing aside Lashon Hara. El yisod ha'isur talui b'midah ra'ah. Lashon Hara is usur because it represents a bad character trait, that you're trying to denigrate someone for no reason. But if you're doing it for a positive reason, not for a negative one, this isn't a sin with an exception. It isn't a sin. It's a mitzvah of lotam rol dam reyecha, of tochecha, of God knows what. Just one second. Right? And this is quoted, by the way, not just by Rav Asher Weiss. It's quoted by Rav Avadi Yosef. It's quoted by Moshe Sternbach. It's quoted by Mishlomo Zalman Orbach. It's quoted by the Tzitz Eliezer. Right? This tshuva is quoted, this piece of Mishlei Tshuva is quoted over and over and over by Poskim. And if you look at them, you'll see that even when they quote the Chafetz Chaim, they're not as stringent in applying all seven rules, because they have this, because there seems to be this sort of secondary, right? What I would argue is actually primary, right? But it's less spoken about feeling in Poskim, that Lashon Hara tells you, you can't denigrate, you can't speak badly about someone for no reason. But if there is a necessity to share certain information, then you've got to share it. You can't just, or let me just reorient you this way, right? Let me just, okay? It's not that it's usher to say negative information, and sometimes it's permitted. It's that sometimes it's usher to say negative information, and sometimes it's a mitzvah to convey negative information, and therefore not sharing the information is not the safe option. And that's what I need to reorient you to, is the feeling you get if you only read the Chafetz Chaim is that not sharing information is always the safer option. What the Pitchei Tshuva tells you, and is quoted by all these later poskim, is that's not always the safer option. The question isn't always, should I share or should I be safe and not share? Sometimes the information is, what damage will come from sharing and what damage will come from not sharing, and you've got to recognize that you have an equal obligation to weigh the potential damage from not sharing as you do from sharing, right? It's not, right? And this is just where I want to reorient you. Don't always think that the presumption is not to share, and therefore you've got to push yourself to prove that you can share. Right? You've got to weigh this, recognizing that there are biblical obligations on both sides, some which will push you to share, and some which will push you not to share, and therefore there is no safe option. Right? There is no safe option when you're dealing, especially with kids, right? There is not a safe option. There's often information that must be shared, and you need to internalize the consequences in both directions. Now, let me just read the Chafetz Chaim and then we'll take questions. But the Chafetz Chaim, right, I gave you a summary. The Chafetz Chaim clearly carves this out as the presumption is don't speak, and then if you want to speak, letoelet, so then you've got to follow these following seven. So, for example, he says, I just gave you a summary, you have to have seen it yourself, meaning you need to know it firsthand. Okay? Now, this is often hard, right? Because you don't, right? You know, take an extreme case. You find out from a kid he's being abused, right? You don't know it firsthand, so what? Now you can't share that information, right? You violate the first rule. But if you look in the Madane Yontif on the Rush on Daf Samach Aleph in Amud Beis in Nida, he says as follows. He says the Gemara says that Gedaliah ben Achikam was killed, right? Sorry, was responsible for the death of his men. So the Gemara says why he was responsible for the death of his men, because he heard there was an assassination plot, and he didn't believe it. And the Gemara says, well, why should he believe it? He didn't know it was true. Maybe they were lying to him. Maybe it was unfounded slander. So the Gemara says, you're right, he shouldn't have believed it, but mechush mibay. He should have at least taken precautions as if it were true. And the Madana Yontif, commenting on the Rush, says, well, wait a second. Does it make any sense that the Gemara says that for myself and my men, I need to be worried that even, you know, when I hear information which is critical but might or might not be true, you're right, I can't internalize and say it's obviously true, but I do have to take precautions. Does it make any sense that I'm allowed to and obligated to take that precaution for myself but not for somebody else? No. He said, if someone tells me they're being abused and I'm not sure it's true, but it might be true, if it was my kid and I thought my kid might be being abused, I would investigate immediately. So someone else's kid, I'm going to go to the Chafetz Chaim and say, well, I don't know, it's absolutely true, because I can't, so I can't share the information. Right? Lo Allah al das shum adam. Right? He says, that's a violation. V'haftal reicha kamocha. The Gemara says that even when things are not totally clear, but they're clearly important, you have to take care of yourself. For sure you have to take care of other people. So the Chafetz Chaim tells you, you need to know things firsthand. Madana Yantif and many posts came after him say, no, you're right. You can't just believe something that somebody says automatically, but just because you don't know it to be definitely true, that doesn't mean you You can't share information. You can't start taking precautions. You've got to have a head on your shoulders. Or number two, right? Number two, everyone agreed with, right? You should reflect thoroughly, right? You should make sure that what's happening is clearly bad. Okay, that, sure, right? Share information only when you're sure that it's worth sharing, that it's actually negative. Or three, okay. First, if possible, you should approach the person being spoken about and try to deal with it directly. But that's not always possible, right? You take abuse, right? You can't always approach the parent. That's not necessarily the best way of doing things. Maybe it is, but it might be the worst thing you could possibly do. Right? Four, right? Don't exaggerate the sin. Fine. Right? Convey information as is. Right? Everyone can sign on to that one. Right? Whatever you heard, don't exaggerate it for sure, but convey it. Fine. Five, you must have pure intentions. So this is a problem, right? Meaning, sometimes, sure, you're doing it just for the good of the kid, but what if that same parent that you've heard of has, you know, been abusive to the kid has been abusive to you? So now, according to the Chafetz Chaim, what, I can't share that information? Because, you know what? If that parent, if it turns out the parent's abusive and he gets, you know, and whatever, you know, whatever consequences come because of that, I'm going to be happy because I've also suffered at his brunt. So now what? I can't share that information because deep in my soul, maybe you should eviscerate that little, right, personal, on your midos level. But, you know, obviously, if you've been yelled at by the parent, so maybe, you know, you're more apt to believe something that may or may not be true, you've got to take that into account. But you can't always only share information when you're doing it only for the right reason, because sometimes, you know, you also might, you know, you might also, you know, be happy that something happens for personal reasons, right? You've got to, right? And six, he says, what if, can you accomplish it, you know, can you accomplish the purpose in the other way? Okay, fine. So sometimes you can accomplish it without talking about it, sometimes not. And the seventh, he says, what if speaking Lashon Hara will cause more damage than Halacha would dictate, right? So this is really tricky. If you follow this, right, abuse is always a good example for this, right? What would the punishment be for abuse in Halacha? I don't know, right? Maybe it's Mazik, okay? So maybe he'd have to pay, maybe, right? I don't know. It'd probably be a monetary punishment. What is it going to be in secular law? It's going to be prison time. Does that mean that you're never allowed to report abuse because the punishment that the Canadian court would carry out is not what Halacha would carry out? No! Right? That's not your problem. Right? As many poskim have said, that's not always your problem. Right? So what I want to just, again, I don't want to poskin for you. What I want to orient you to is that the way people often present it, as if there's this presumption, every information that you're sharing is always usur, unless you can check off all seven boxes, and the safe thing to do is to be quiet. That's not true. As the Pinchas Tshuva notes, and again, this is quoted by all major poskim in the 20th century, right? I mean, not the Chafetz Chaim. He doesn't quote. Actually, no. Sorry, he does. The Chafetz Chaim does quote this Pesachei Tshuva, right? But it's quoted even without the seven conditions by, again, Rav Avadya Yosef, Tzitzil Eliezer, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Moshe Sternbach. Pick your posek. They've quoted this Tshuva, at this piece in the Pesachei Tshuva, more than once. And the reason they do it is, as he said, if you talk too much about Chafetz Chaim and forget to emphasize that speech ethics in Halacha is complicated, like there are countervailing principles, and sometimes it's as dangerous to be quiet as it is to share information, right? That reorients you and reminds you that there is no safe option, right? That ups the responsibility that you have to weigh everything that you say, okay? Right? And that's, I think, something that's critical, especially in dealing in education. Because, you know what? Yes, sometimes information is not necessary. But sometimes, you're not usually... There's three types of information, right? Information that must be shared, information that should not be shared, and information that's neutral, right? But there's a lot of information in education which, right, on the one hand, we need information which clearly should not be shared. We should do a better job at not sharing it. We shouldn't just assume that, you know, a student was a little bit annoying and I just need to, you know, say my grievances, right? He was a little bit too needy on the Shabbaton, you know, we were on a long bus ride and he just complained a little bit too much. Maybe you don't have to share that information, right? But on the other hand, we have to be sensitive to the fact that some of the information does have to be shared. Again, not, you know, let's leave abuse, which is a, you know, let's say a more clear-cut case. But again, the kid who disrupts, right, who's going to destroy the next class he's in, right? You are responsible not just for the kid, that kid who's the disruptor for his Torah, you're responsible for everybody else in the classroom. If you don't share that information and you ruin the course for the next for the next cohort of students. Right? So now, what did you get? Your Chumrah and Lashon Hara turned into you sacrificing the Talmud Torah of a whole group. Right? Or if you have a kid, not just disrupts, a kid who makes other kids uncomfortable. Right? He's a cynic. Right? He makes it impossible for other people to be inspired. Are you not going to share that information? Right? Why are you not going to share that information? You're responsible for all the kids, not just that kid. Right? You have a parallel obligation to be mechanech the other kids, to inspire the other kids, to protect the other kids. Right? You always have to remember there's a cost on both sides. And therefore, starting every conversation as if the starting point is don't talk, right, it's a bit dangerous, because sometimes if we overthink not talking, forget that we're balancing obligations, right, we don't say what needs to be said. Okay, two questions. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming from a very different perspective, which is that I would say for sure for me that the modus operandi is you're in a meeting, everything goes, right? You're talking about everybody. So I don't need somebody to convince me to speak more Lashon Hara. But I want to know what are the categories of pulling back, that how do you make sure that now that we do have this Pesachei Tshuva, and you have these other sources that you quoted, how do you put it into practice on a very practical level?
Okay, so let me...
It's not just like a free-for-all.
Okay, good. So let me add two more...
It'll just be a free-for-all.
Okay, so let me add two more positives, then we'll come back to negatives, okay? Two more positives, okay? One more argument that many people note is from the Tzitzel Yezer in number 9. The Tzitzel Yezer was asked about sharing information in a doctor's office between the doctors and the residents and the medical students, or the doctor and the secretary. And the Tzitzel Yezer said that's obviously permitted. You know why? Because everyone understands that's how the doctor's office functions. If you limited any transfer of information, things just wouldn't function. So everybody understands. You come to a doctor's office, anybody who needs to know will know. They won't, publicize your medical condition to the whole world, but if they need to tell their secretary or the specialists or the other doctors treating you, obviously they're going to share the information, right? Now that's true always in life, and this is the meeting point, right? Sometimes you recognize there's certain information that everybody understands. If you come into a classroom and you're applying for next semester, at some level everyone understands that your conduct this semester will be brought up at the meeting so they can effectively figure out next semester. And that's just an assumption of entering into any institution. And therefore, that's it, right? Postscript note. Yeah, you're right. At a certain level in the meeting, there is an expectation that certain information is going to be shared. The last thing is that I said, right, normally you shouldn't just, complain about the kids, right? He whined, she, whatever. That's not always true either. And that's for a reason the Gemara says, number 10, that Daga Belevi Ish Yashchena, to Pasuk and Mishle. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? That if you're worried, so Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Chadar Me Yashchena, Midata, Chadar Me Yashchena, Lachirim. If you're really, really stressed out, so there's two ways of dealing with that. One is just forgetting about it. But if you're not good at forgetting about it, how do you deal with problems often? You vent to somebody. And that's okay. The Gemara says, under some circumstances, it's okay to vent. Right now, obviously, you shouldn't, overdo this heter. Or you shouldn't just say, well, I'm stressed out, let me, vent every negative thing that every student has ever done, and maybe you don't need to share names. But you know what? You're allowed to, right? If you have had, an intense 5-day yarchikal, I'm sure there's a lot of stress, right? You need to unwind at the end, and you say, okay, so don't name all the kids who whined. But if there was a good group of kids that were whining a lot that made it stressful and you just need to, unwind, under certain circumstances you can just turn to somebody and say, that was a great Yarchei Kala, but, I wish we could figure out how to deal with those whining kids. It just sometimes helpful just to verbalize that. Okay, so minimize talking about people. But okay, so now let's come to the limitations. Yeah.
So just on a very practical level, I have a lot of meetings discussing students. Like, that's literally what I do. So part of the challenge is to understand that what's the balance in terms of hearing everything. And also I want to know that I'm very conscious of the legal confidentiality piece. So if I know something about mental health or something, I won't share
correct.
For legalities. But I want to know from a halakhic perspective, to what degree do we also have to keep that? And also obviously halakha will play in if there's a legal limit, even if it's whatever else.
Well, look, if there's a legal confidentiality assumption, then you can't share it for two reasons. One is Dina Machuza Dina, and the second is, this comes back to our first point, that halacha says anything which is presumed confidential has to stay confidential. If someone knows there's confidentiality laws, they assume you're keeping them. So if you violate them, right, you're violating, right, that's not a case where, right, actually Yom L'Chayamor, if they give you information and it's presumed confidential, it is presumed confidential halachically also. Right? You can't then go sharing it. Right? That's not just true legally because Din Malchus, it's true because of the Gemara.
We have summer programs. right? Like medications people are on and other
correct.
Stuff that's insane.
Correct. I mean, again, I don't know the details of the confidentiality, but I would say basically would map on to the legal one, right? Because think about, right, I mean, basically, when someone files with you, right, all their mental health history, they expect that because of confidentiality laws, whoever you're allowed to share it with, you'll share it with. Whoever you're not allowed to share it with, you won't. That's the equivalent of Atchiyom Lo Emor, right? They gave it to you, which means they now expect that anyone who legally is allowed to get that information will get it, and anyone who isn't legally allowed to get them information won't. I think that's what halacha would say too. At that point, whoever you can expect they thought would know about this information, right? They're giving you permission by handing it in, right, to give to other people. Anyone they're not, they're not. Okay. So what are the limitations on it? Yeah. Yeah.
The person we work with, obviously, students, let's say on Israel trip, right? And often you get kids who want to share things about their lives and share things like, again, like you said, the possibly abuse or something like that. But let's say it's less than that, a little bit less than that, right? Do we have a side of halacha to know what, like, again, like maybe this is just semantical, but like, when do we know this needs? I mean, there's red flags that are obvious, suicide, whatever. Like, obviously, things affect the intent of the actual person on the other side, and they're in danger. So therefore, we know that we have a tzad to just go and try to fix the situation. But what about when it gets a little lower than that? Like, I can't give a practical example that's far below. But are we saying that because we are madrichim and we are leaders that we can paskin when we can paskin how we delineate the information given, because that's our role as grown-ups and teachers and stuff like that, and that's fine, and that's how halacha dictates? Or is it different? That's my question.
Can I ask a practical question on that?
Just sure.
You say can't be practical. I just happened to be this weekend.
Okay.
The young lady who I believe is applying for a particular summer trip.
Let me pause.
Might be good or not. Might not be good. I'm not sure for a particular trip. Okay. And different people have different perspectives. But I know that the entire weekend, what she was doing was faking her behavior in front of the director of that trip, so that behavior, or that director would say, oh, wow, she's amazing. But I know she's not amazing at all. And now I know, you know what I'm talking about already? Some people know what we're talking about. So imagine, I now know this information, and I know that if she gets on that trip, some amazing child will not get on that trip because of the fact that she is selling herself in a way that is inappropriate. Now, do I have a halachic response? By the way,
okay,
I thought about this for 2 hours over.
Okay, let me Ray Black's point.
That example. What if the director of that program would come to me? Like,
okay, so right. Okay, so let me. Let me pick up for a second. What Ray Black said. Okay, and what you. Okay, right. Okay, so here. I remember when I first sort of went through the sugya and suggested this reframing, which to be fair I think is actually the consensus of postgame. I think I'm just detailing it here, but okay. One of my rebbeim said to me, he said, "Are you? I don't. You know," he said, "people. You know, as you said, people are so easy to say lashon hara. Do you really want to present it as if like, oh, you know, the Chavetz Chaim is too machmir. Let's remove chumas. Is that what you want to do?" And I said, No. That's not what I want to do. That's not what I'm saying. And this is what, you know, and Ray Black's story, I think, epitomizes it. I'm actually arguing that the majority of poskim think that your responsibility is higher. Because, let me put it this way. What do people often think about? If it's not Lashon Hara, right, so what I've got to think about? I have to think about Lashon Hara. Right? If it's not Lashon Hara, so then things are neutral. What the Pesachei Tshuva tells you is there is no such thing as a neutral question. There is always a cost. And therefore, yes, on the one hand, I don't want to minimize the fact that often there's cost in sharing negative information, right? Yes, Lashon Hara, meaning needless, negative information, is a terrible thing. It can destroy lives. But there is no such thing as a neutral question, as you know, right? There is no such thing. Every single question is a balancing act. Right? Saying has costs. Not saying has costs. And I think that's really what I want to reorient you to, is to realize that that's really what halacha wants you to do, is recognize, not to say, the Chavetz Chaim, he was too machmir. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that when you emphasize the only category is lashon hara, you forget that there's a cost to not saying. Right? So now coming to the, right, what? Okay, and now so chatasi that I'll tell you, right, that the downside of saying this, right, is that it makes it much harder, right, almost impossible to give you, right, sort of magic halachic formula, and therefore forces you to sort of, you know, ask the questions yourself. The most that, you know, there's a tshuva in the Torah Lishma, tshuva Shin Samach Dalet. Okay, he was asked. He said, "Can you give me guidelines when I'm allowed to lie for peace and when I'm not?" Okay, right? What the Torah Lishma is probably written by the Ben Ish Chai, right? He claims it wasn't. He claims it was a full tshuva sefer he found, right? But it's probably written by the whatever. Okay, it's probably by the Ben Ish Chai, but okay, fine, right? The guy asked him, "Give me practical guidance. When can I lie for the sake of peace and when can I not?" And you would find this tshuva so frustrating. It's 10 pages long. He goes through every case in the Gemara, Rishonim and Achronim, on both sides of the equation, and he says, at the end, what's his last line? "All of this should provide guidance. Now go figure it out yourself." Right? Now that is the last thing in the world that most people want when the practical guidance. But you know what he's telling you? He's telling you that, yeah, with speech ethics, what are you going to do? You're going to call up the Gadol Hador on every single Shaila? Right? You can't. You're always balancing. Life is a balancing act. You've got to, at some level, familiarize yourself with the positive values and the negative values you need to balance and do your best. And a lot of cases are going to be gray. Now, what's the case that's most similar to yours, right, that the post can deal with a lot, is the Shidduch Shaila. Right? The Shidduch Shaila, it's all the time. And so I'll try to give you some guidelines from there. Right? So what do the post can say? The post can say, any information, right, that is absolutely necessary, right, you've got to share. Right, you've just got to share, right? If you know the person is currently not sharing the fact that they are mentally ill, you have to share that. End of story. Done. Right?
When are you supposed to say that?
But there's certain information you've got to share. Certain information, right, don't share, because you may think it's a negative, but you know what? Maybe it's not, right? Meaning, right, I don't know, someone gets... What?
It's under control.
Or let me just, give it, a fine example, right? Some people, right? Some people, what?
The person is cheap.
He's cheap, right? One person looks at it as cheap. You know what I'm saying? There's certain things. You look at it as cheap. The other person looks at it as frugal, right? Right? That's not negative. So, whatever. Don't share it. It's not, you don't have the right to just assume that. Then there's, right, middle things, right? And then there's the question of when. Right, when do you share information? So a lot of posts can say, well, it depends. If something is clearly something that should be known, but it's not invalidating, right? So many of the posts can say, well, you know what? You don't have to tell the person before the first date, because what is it going to do? It's going to unfairly color that person. Because now, right, if you tell them, they have a history of mental illness, that will unfairly color the person, because maybe now they're fine. Besides, Shani, you can't never tell them, because it is a... someone who's marrying them needs to know. So if the person isn't going to share it by pick your number date, right? Before they get engaged. The person isn't planning on sharing before engaged. So when you realize they're about to get engaged and they haven't shared it, you have to pipe up. But you don't have to share it at the beginning, because it's fair for someone to say, you know what, let the person get to know me and get a fuller picture, but I'm fully planning on sharing it. Right? But shiduchim is the same, is exactly this problem. Is that not saying is unfair. Right? Because it costs the spouse. Right? Or in this case, not saying, right, is unfair because it costs another kid. Right? Saying too much is unfair because, you know what? Maybe you think the person isn't as great, but maybe the person really is good. Or maybe the director will decide that that student really could benefit from the trip. And you know what? You're not going to go on the trip, and the person on the trip has the right to say, you know what? I think I could work with this student. Right?
That's why I didn't say it.
But maybe the answer is... right. But honestly, maybe the answer is, right, let them interview, right, let them get a picture, and then provide information. Because this
they
is...
ask me, I have an achrayas.
If you have an... If they ask
they
you...
ask me, I'm off the hook.
Maybe, or... But I'll give you another possibility, right? So, I'm going over time, but I'll share it with you. If you don't care, I'll go over time. Right, Black, modern psychologists have this right, this notion that human beings are influenced by a series of heuristics, right? We use shortcuts. Right, one of them is the devil effect and the halo effect, meaning we are unfairly biased by the first information we hear about somebody. Right, that our first interaction with someone is positive, and the next one is ambiguous, we view it positively. If the first one was negative and the next one is ambiguous, we view it negatively. Right, so Nechama Leibovich even says that this is the reason that the pasuk doesn't tell you that Yosef cried when he was being sold into slavery. right, by his brothers, and only tells you later when they're doing tshuva. Because she said there's a difference. If you tell them up front that that he was crying, so in your mind, your picture is these evil brothers selling their brother, you know, into slavery. If you only find out that he's crying when they're doing tshuva, it's tempered, and you realize that what they did was wrong, but, you know, it gives you a more balanced picture, because now you're hearing that he cried, and you're hearing how bad it was, but you're realizing that they're capable of doing tshuva. So the Torah sort of downplays their sin until you get a more balanced picture, right? So maybe the answer is, don't tell them at the beginning. Let the person apply, right? Let the person get an interview. And if the director forms a generally positive opinion and you want to balance it, so balance it. And the person can take that as they want. But it will be more balanced than if you start them off and say that person is a charlatan, right? And was sucking up to you the whole thing. Because you know what? Right now, maybe the person changed, maybe the person they can work with, but now they're unfairly biased. The answer is, right, not just what to say, the answer is also sometimes when to say it. Sometimes the answer is wait so that a balanced picture can come out. And again, I don't want, there is no black and white answers. What I think is important is to recognize, yes, on the negative side, there's lashon hara, possibility of hurting people. But on the positive side, you're responsible for people's education, you're responsible for the chinuch, you're responsible to take care of them, you're responsible for the well-being, just the educational well-being of everybody else in the classroom. So there are things you have to say. The, I think, fundamental insight of halacha is that there is, unfortunately, no safe choice. That every single choice will have a consequence. And what you need to do, if you want to approach it from a halachic perspective, is deeply familiarize yourself with, like internalize, the negative consequences of lashon hara, and internalize the negative consequences, right? You said you spent 2 hours. Good, so spend 2 hours and realize what's going on here. On the one hand, I'm responsible not to unfairly hurt this girl. On the other hand, I'm responsible for the education of the kids in the program, both the ones who will make it on the program and will be influenced by this girl, and the ones who might lose the spot to this girl, right? And ask yourself the question, okay, I'm balancing now two values. So, you may come to the decision that, you know, she's so disruptive that you're responsible more to the welfare of the other girls. You might be responsible that, no, this is someone they could work with. Or you might decide, you know what, I'm not sure. It's an information that probably needs to be shared, but I'm not sure the conclusion that should be reached from the information. So I'm not going to offer the information early. And you know, you can do this, right? The director can call you up and you can say, give me your opinion. So now you should really tell them your opinion. But you have two choices. You can tell them, okay, here's my opinion. Or you can say, you know what, why don't you interview her first? I don't want to bias your opinion, right? L'tov or l'ra. Why don't you interview her first? And then call me back and I'll complete the picture and together we'll come up with a balanced picture and you'll make the decision, right?
They're not good.
No. No, not necessarily.
I don't want to bias you.
No, because it could be good.
I think people have a lot of questions, so let's maybe save that for private conversation.
Okay. So we're over time, so I'm going to end. I will stick around for a bit for questions, but I hope I at least gave you something to think about in a framework. And unfortunately, Rabbi Black, right, in the spirit of the Torah Lishma, right, my goal was not to give you answers, but to sort of complicate the picture. And what?
You were successful, Rabbi.
Good. Baruch Hashem. But I hope at least gives you sort of complicates the picture in a fruitful way, which forces you to research more, right? Not to come up with sort of simplistic answers, because the answer is there isn't, but it's much more complicated than I think often people present it as. Okay.